From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the third day of May, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. We'll get an update of crop progress across the Midwest from the statisticians in Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. And we'll hear all about digital agriculture in the state of Illinois, what that means, and of course, we'll go all the way back in history and talk about what's been happening on the land in southern Illinois and how it was the birthplace of no-till. And it all happened right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn settled at $7.93. That was down 10.5 for the day. The December at $7.35.25, 7 lower. July beans down 14.75 at $16.30.5. And November, $14.78.25, down 12.25. The bean meal, $7 lower at $423.90. The bean oil, $80.28, up 19 cents. Wheat futures, a soft red, down a dime at $10.45.5. Live cattle futures for the day, 12.5 cents higher. Feeders were up 2.20. And the lean hogs down $2.77.5. They finished at $102.20, that for 100 pounds. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, now joins us to take a look at what's been happening in the marketplace. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for being with us.
Pleasure to be here.
Let's talk about this marketplace. What happened today to begin with?
Well, we started off sort of looking at the planting progress, which was way behind, 8% and 13%, which is the lowest we've been for quite a few years, and looking at the rain coming in this week, and we were higher when we walked in this morning. And then later in the day, we started selling off, and we had a real mixed session today. We're going to close down about 13 in the May corn, 10 and a quarter in the July, and 8 and a quarter in the D. So, and then beans down about 13, 14, and 13. So, quite a sell-off as the day went on. A lot talking about the interest rates and what's going to happen.
Yeah, so interest rates and inflation. And I assume what the discussion now is whether this economy is going to start to shrink and if that's going to have an impact. Is that what you're beginning to hear?
We're hearing a lot of that. I mean, it's that are we doing it too fast? Are we doing it too slow? Are we going to be able to do anything? Can we do this in a soft landing? And a lot of different opinions on what it is. But, basically, as we look around the world, this recession, the inflation is hitting everybody and throwing their economies into something sort of crazy. So the inflation levels have moved some of this stuff up and sort of priced it out of some of the others, what they have money to spend and that for things. And the embargoes we're seeing from, I'm not going to ship palm oil. I'm going to ship palm oil. I'm not going to ship this. I'm not going to ship oil. It's creating a lot of misunderstandings. What we've seen a lot of, though, is funds going to the door, just wanting to sit aside and take a look and see until maybe we get planted here. I think in some cases, the open interest was dropping pretty sharply. So we're seeing a much lower volume, and it doesn't take much to move this market either way. If we see, a bigger trade come in, we can move it 5-6 cents pretty fast. So that's sort of what's going on.
Is there reason for producers to be concerned about prices turning over and heading south?
Well, we always, when we're up towards the top and it looks like an interim top's been made, we always are a little bit concerned about that. But, there's a lot of the fundamentals are still out there. We're way behind planting. It's awfully wet. And depending on which weatherman you look at, when are we going to be able to get back in the field? I think that, we are worried about the Chinese demand, that it might be shrinking with all their big cities shut down. They're talking about their imports are going to be less this year, and that can have an effect. And, what money and what's available, and is shipping going to be available for some of the other stuff to go out of here? But all in all, with the planning delays and with the Ukraine basically still in the middle of a big war, I don't think we're going to fall out of bed immediately.
What do local fundamentals in your area seem like today, for instance, the ethanol plant and planting progress locally?
Well, you know, the ethanol plant, they had to stop production for a while, but they're still aggressively trying to buy corn. Their problem is they've got cars sitting there loaded that haven't been moved. We need rail power. As far as the planting progress, we zoomed along in our area quite a bit. They planted through yesterday, into parts of yesterday and that way. So, you know, we've seen a fair amount go in the ground. I'm not worried about our planting time over here. I think our crops will be planted timely. So we're feeling pretty good about that. So, you know, we're looking at things and, you know, if we get a little surge back up a little bit, I think we probably will see a little farmer selling going on.
Hey, thanks so much, Wayne.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, Ukraine has accused Russia of stealing its grain in areas Russian forces occupy, a charge that, if true, increases the threat to global food security. As if the threat of a global food shortage from Russia's war on Ukraine wasn't bad enough, now there's Ukraine's charge that Russia is stealing its grain. Minnesota Representative Betty McCollum sits on the House Ag Committee and had this comment.
I believe, from what I've read, we're at the greatest risk with our global supply since World War II.
Reuters reported Ukraine opened a criminal case into charges that Russian soldiers on April the 26th took away 61 tons of wheat from an ag enterprise in southern Ukraine. Russia says it has no information about it. Dave Samuelson, a senior director of congressional relations at the American Farm Bureau, says he's concerned.
If this is happening, takes this grain out of world supply. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. Who knows where it'll end up. But, you know, Ukraine has been such a large exporter of grain.
Well, the world's fourth largest year at almost 45 million tons, much of it going to the Middle East and Africa. Back to McCollum and her comments.
Africa imports huge percentage of its food from Russia and Ukraine, and it's being hit especially hard. Wheat prices are up by 60%. Fertilizer shortages could cut food production by almost 20%.
And the United Nations estimates that about 1.7 billion people may face poverty and hunger due to food disruptions from the war.
This feeds into a national security crisis for the United States when there's so much civil strife going on, especially for access to food.
And that was Betty McCollum. She chairs the House Appropriations Defense Subcommittee. And this story today, a little bit closer to home. FAPRI has updated the 2022 ag market snapshot. Events of the last 3 months have had large impacts on agricultural markets. The war in Ukraine, drought in South America, and other developments have resulted in sharp commodity price increases. The Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri, otherwise known as FAPRI, says that resulted in higher farm receipts and costs and higher food prices. The April snapshot says those factors are all higher than what got reported during the 2022 baseline outlook in January. Projected harvested prices are much higher, with corn prices over $6 a bushel, wheat over $8 a bushel, and soybeans over $14. Livestock sector prices will get boosted by lower 2022 production as well than previously expected and some strong demand. Avian influenza will reduce the number of laying hens and egg production, says FAPRI, and higher production expenses than previously projected now show a $55 billion increase in total production costs. The projected net farm income is almost the same as in 2021, according to University of Missouri's Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows as of Sunday that 14% of the corn crop around the nation had been sown. That compares to the 33% rolling five-year average. 3% of that crop is up. The normal is 6%, and the soybeans, 8% have been put in the ground. The rolling five-year average is 13%, and the winter wheat is now 23% headed. The five-year average is 29%. The condition of the wheat, not good. It's 24% good and 3% excellent. Last year, by the way, those numbers were 42%. And 6%. And one final thing to take a quick look at, suitable days for field work for the week. In Illinois last week, and you'll hear this in just a bit, but there were 1.5 suitable days for field work. That compares to normal of about 3 field days. Iowa, 2.3. The normal there is just 2.8, so they're not doing so terribly bad. And in Nebraska, we'll take one final look out west and see how they did. 5.8 days, and they were 5.1 days in May of last year. Now, here are the numbers from Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota.
This is Melissa Bonds. Despite rain and cold conditions, Iowa farmers made progress planting corn and soybeans with 2.8 days suitable for field work last week. Fieldwork activities also included tillage, applying anhydrous and nitrogen, planting oats, and limited spraying. Topsoil moisture condition rated 3% very short, 13% short, 68% adequate, and 16% surplus. Subsoil moisture condition rated 8% very short, 22% short, 63% adequate, and 7% surplus. Despite continued cool soil temperatures, 9% of Iowa's expected corn crop has been planted, 11 days behind last year and 9 days behind the five-year average. Farmers in the western third of Iowa had at least 3.7 days suitable for field work and made more planting progress than those in the rest of the state. 4% of the expected soybean crop has been planted, 9 days behind the previous year and 5 days behind the average. 63% of the expected oat crop has been planted, almost 2 weeks behind last year and 1 week behind the five-year average. 18% of the oat crop has emerged, 10 days behind last year and 6 days behind the average. Pasture and hay growth were still slow. Livestock conditions were challenging with muddy feedlots and pastures. For the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office, this is Melissa Bond.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. The average temperature across Illinois last week was 53.7 degrees, almost 3 degrees below normal. Rainfall averaged 9/10 of an inch and was equal to the average for this week. Southern parts of the state were generally wetter than average, while central and northern areas were drier than normal. There were only 3 days suitable for field work last week, and topsoil moisture was reported as 2% short, 58 adequate, and 40% surplus. On Sunday, soil temperatures ranged from the mid-40s in northern Illinois to the mid-50s in southern parts of the state. Corn planting advanced 5 points and is now 7% complete. That compares to 50% 1 year ago and 43% for the five-year average. Soybean planting reached 5% finish compared to 38% last year and 19% normally. 12% of winter wheat acres are now heading. That compares to 21% 1 year ago and 24% normally. The condition of the wheat crop in Illinois was rated 25% very poor to poor, 27% fair, and 48% good to excellent. Pasture conditions improved and were rated 5% very poor to poor, 26% fair, and 69% good to excellent. I would like to thank all the people that responded to the crop progress and condition report this week. We really appreciate your assistance in telling the story of Illinois agriculture. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Another cold, wet week further delayed planting across most of the state, with just 1.1 days rated suitable for field work. Topsoil moisture supplies rated 1% very short, 6% short, 64% adequate, and 29% surplus. Subsoil moisture supplies rated 2% very short, 14% short, 68% adequate, and 16% surplus. Pasture conditions were rated 20% very poor, 19% poor, 33% fair, 26% good, and 2% excellent. Spring wheat planting was reported at 1% compared to 64% a year ago and the five-year average of 24%. Oats planted was reported at 7% compared to last year's 65% and the five-year average of 38%. Barley planted was reported at 1% compared to last year's 56% and the five-year average of 20%. Potatoes planted was reported at 1% compared to last year's 39% and the five-year average of 26%. Sugar beets planted was reported at 1% compared to last year's 72% and the five-year average of 38%. Very limited corn and soybean planting were reported, and both remain below 1% planted. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly crop progress reports. Now, up next, did you know that no-till is an Illinois legacy? That's right. Dixon Springs in the deep southern part of Illinois is the birthplace of the modern no-till era for agriculture. And of course, it's a research farm for the University of Illinois as well. Here's a story I produced in 2007, looking back on the history of no-till. It was here in deep southern Illinois, close to the Shawnee National Forest and the furthest north cypress swamp in the United States, that the modern era of farming was challenged and changed. The lands roll, and when it rains, wash away into the Ohio and Mississippi rivers by the ton, or at least they did, until a University of Illinois agronomist decided there had to be a better way to grow crops on the hillsides. For 37 years, George McKibben experimented and evangelized what was to become the modern era of no-till farming. Illinois agronomist Steve Ebelhair explains the effects of the research can be seen throughout the southern Illinois landscape.
Oh, absolutely, because back in the 30s and 40s, when the area was still under conventional tillage system, we saw a lot of really gully erosion. A lot of water coming off the fields, just saturated with soil, just dark soil moving off the profiles, off the landscapes. And now when you see a rain, you know, it's mostly clearer water, not a lot of soil movement because the residues are helping hold the soil in place. So we don't see the gullies that we once saw under conventional till system where the water has moved tremendous amounts of soil off the profiles.
What really made George McKibben's no-till experiments at Dixon Springs work as a soil-saving tool is pretty simple. And there's a reason it took so long for farmers to adopt the practice, meaning reasons it wasn't thought of or worked on prior to the 1960s. The technology to control weeds hadn't been developed and adapted to the farm before that time. The herbicides, allowed McKibben's no-till experiments to work, says Ebelhair.
It's really the merger of good weed control herbicides coming into the market and the pioneering efforts of George McKibben that really made no-till take off in the early 60s into the 70s.
And then in the mid-1990s, when the herbicide-resistant varieties of soybeans were introduced, no-till really began to boom. The crop had been modified to withstand being sprayed with a herbicide, and no-till acres around the nation and in Illinois jumped. The first time no-till soybean acres outnumbered any other tillage method in Illinois, by the way, came in 2007, decades after George McKibben planted his first no-till experiments at Dixon Springs. Now that we've looked back on history, let's look forward into the world of agriculture. One of the things that's really been taking hold over the last several years is big data, digital agriculture, drones, and all kinds of automation. Extension here in the state of Illinois has a brand new extension specialist. His name is Dennis Bowman. He's been in extension for a long time, but is now dedicated to that digital area. I asked him last week at the drone contest in Danville, Illinois, why it is that Illinois Extension decided to create this digital specialist position.
They saw the movement in agriculture to the adoption of digital technologies, and we've got a lot of projects going on at the University of Illinois in the area of digital agriculture, and they need an extension component to help take that information off campus out to folks and also to bring a real-world perspective back to campus. to some of the research teams to help make sure that we're addressing the needs of today's farmers.
I also asked Dennis to define digital agriculture.
So digital ag is, precision ag is a piece of digital ag. Digital ag is kind of the big thing that involves basically using numbers in agriculture, just like it says digital ag. But all those numbers come because we're collecting data with digital cameras. We're digitizing our soil samples. We've got maps. We've got aerial images. And all this is digital. And because it's in a digital format with location tied to it, then you can start getting these layers to interact with each other. And so if you've got a soil map that's been digitized so that each area of the field, you know exactly what the soil type is, and then you start comparing that to a yield map, you can do things like easily pick out what the yield was in that field based on in each of the regions where the soil types were, and you can see what impact the soil type had. You could also do that with the fertility levels in the field based on your soils map or any other type of application that's been done to the field. You can track that in history and see if it had an impact on yield. So you get all these numbers and you can interact with them. You can have things like artificial intelligence that can take over some of this analysis and start looking at all these layers with the powers of supercomputers to try to figure out what things are correlated to each other, what things are interacting with each other, what kind of impact or interactions things are causing in the field. So it's there's a lot to do there, and some of the best researchers in the world are at the University of Illinois campus. And so this computer technology that we've always been a leader in is now merging with agriculture, and we've got these joint programs between computer sciences and agriculture, and crop sciences and animal sciences, and with ag economics that are helping bring these tools together to help solve farming problems.
Dennis Bowman is a digital agricultural specialist for University of Illinois Extension. I caught up with him last week in the Danville Area Community College for a drone flying contest sponsored by Illinois 4-H. Up next, Don Day's here with a look at today's agricultural weather forecast.
The cool and wet weather that has caused some planting delays across many areas of the Midwest will continue to be a concern as we go through this week. We have had a parade of weather systems here over the last few weeks that have come off the Pacific and moved across the central and northern plains of the U.S. And recently, the track of these systems has been a little bit further to the south. This is going to spread another area of rain and thunderstorm activity across Nebraska, Iowa, eastern Kansas, Missouri, and into Indiana, Illinois, and into the Ohio Valley. Rainfall amounts could be anywhere from an inch to over 2 inches of rain in some areas. Especially heavy could be across portions of Missouri and across portions of the central and northern Corn Belt of central Illinois and northern Indiana, northern Ohio, Iowa as well. Now, some of the very dry areas in winter wheat country have been able to pick up a little bit of rain, especially western and southwest areas of Nebraska, parts of western Kansas, and eastern Colorado. Those areas will also benefit from more shower and thunderstorm activity as we go to the middle to the end of this week and as we go into next week. And the long-term trend does look a little bit warmer towards the middle of May. However, the prospects for more rain and thunderstorm activity is going to be pretty high as we go into next week with another system coming out of the west, especially right around and after May 10th or 11th.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. Find us online at willag.org. It's public radio for the farming world.